You tuned in to Relationship Factor, where we talk about all things relationships for millennials, moving you from a problem to solution, from functional to exceptional relationships. I'm your host, Kingsley Moyo. Hey, thanks again for downloading another episode of Relationship Factor. If we are not already connected, I hang out a lot on Instagram. Find me, the handle is Relationship Factor. Occasionally, they are dropping some relationship nuggets that'll pick you up and carry you throughout the week, and some helpful tips on how to build healthy relationships. On this episode, I decided to bring my fam, Arnold Chuma. You know, it's always good to have conversation with families reflecting and reminiscing on times gone by. On this episode, we have a candid conversation, couchside conversation, where we talk about things that we learned in 2020. We talk about what we got from Black Lives Matter, what we got from the pandemic. We talk about how trauma bonds developed and are evident in every relationship. We talk about the relationships that thrive are the relationships that are able to adapt and are flexible. Join me for this conversation. 2020 was wild. 2020 was a weird. 2020 was probably, one we could say, one of the most wonderful years to discover and to learn a whole lot of things about life, relationships, about things in general. As we went through 2020, for most people, it was the first experience having to live in a time like that. And I guess you can now bag it in your whatever you bag things and say, hey, I lived through a pandemic. I lived through a lockdown. I lived through a time where things were uncertain. Arnold, tell me, man, how was 2020 for you, man? Like what happened? How was 2020 for you?
Oh, man, 2020 was different. At the risk of sounding, you know, insensitive to some people, I think for me, 2020 was necessary. 2020 actually pushed me outside of a lot of comfort zones. So because of that, it was necessary. Now, the prices we had to pay, the tax we had to pay for that progress, for that shifting, man, that was a lot. You know, I wouldn't wish that on anybody, but the result, you know, if we take the journey aside and we look at the destination where 2020 brought us to, I feel that was necessary for me at least. It helped me in a lot of ways. The journey, the process may have been a little painful, no doubt, but I'm glad it happened. It took 2020 for me to, you know, appreciate a few things, you know, change a few other things, realize a few things. But that was 2020 for me, man.
It's an interesting take to say that 2020 was necessary in order for people to be pushed out, for you to move out of that sandbox that you play and you're comfortable with. It's a different perspective and shift. And I suppose a lot of people could say that. And the question is, did I want the cost of 2020? Did I want to pay the tax of 2020? That's a whole nother story on itself. And we can talk on and on about that. But I just want to chat with you a little bit, man, talking about the lessons that we learned in 2020. And this is lessons that we personally might have learned, or lessons we saw people going through as they navigated relationships, or things that happened in general around relationship. Let's talk, man. Things we learned in 2020. What did 2020 drop in your plate, man?
For me, I learned to adapt. That was the biggest thing that I learned to do. I'll keep going back. The journey was difficult. The process was difficult. But the end result was me learning to adapt. I learned to telecommute. For a lot of us, we've had to do that. We've had to work from home. You know, if you work for a business or if you own a business, especially for business owners, you had to think on your feet, how do I keep my business running under these new restrictions, under these new circumstances. So you had to sink or swim. You know, that pushed a lot of people outside their comfort zone. You know, how do we worship for those people that in their faith? Whether you go to a temple, you go to a mosque, you go to church, the norm has been you go and gather with people, you fellowship together. You know, suddenly you got to do the distancing. How do you adapt to that? That pushed a lot of people to become innovative. And, you know, those that survived were able to. I'm not necessarily saying those that didn't survive did not want to adapt. Maybe they just couldn't based on the nature of their business or their religion or, you know, gym closing down, for example. Suddenly you can't go to a space and jog on a treadmill. You can't work out on the gym machines, but you know, you're at home, you could do a few push-ups and sit-ups and, you know, an exercise here and there. You could walk around your neighborhood. I discovered parts of my own neighborhood that I didn't know about. Suddenly I had to start walking around my own neighborhood and, you know, what used to be, you know, open plain or just a grassy field, people have built.
You began to see beauty in that open grass.
Well, there was no open grass in some areas. It's developed, right? It's wow, my neighborhood has been growing so much, and I hadn't noticed that. You know, I'm looking at some people in relationships where what does cyber dating look like? You know, people started doing more of the online dating as opposed to, you know, I'll just walk around in the mall, and if I see a pretty girl, I'll say hi, or if I see a handsome dude, you know, I'll bat my eyelashes, kind of thing. That had to you had to step up and adjust your game. For me, my biggest thing was learning to adjust and being intentional about how I adjust, because one of the things that I noticed with the pandemic was the fact that COVID didn't seem to have any favoritism. You know, I look at it and notice there's been a trend in the past where I have noticed at least every 10 years, something major happens. You know, every 10 or so years, something major happens that kind of shifts the atmosphere. You know, 2009, had the economy crashing. You know, a few years earlier, it was 9/11. So those are always like major things that happened in our lifetime that changed everything. You know, with 9/11, it changed travel. It changed, you know, how you walk into an airport. Telecommunications kind of changed that whole night. The economy, you know, went belly up in 2008, and a few industries were expected to suffer, and then some of them would kind of, you know, shrug their shoulders and think, you know, that doesn't concern us.
Like
when
next
this happens, man,
everybody.
Places I didn't think would be affected were affected. You know, certain things that we take for granted were affected. So it made me look, you know, at some of my choices and say to myself, okay, if I were to start this or if I were to work here, you know, usually we've been trained to think of going for a career or an industry that's recession proof. You know,
right. It's interesting you mentioned that we had to adapt, and mainly speaking to the millennials on the podcast that listen, millennials have always been pushing for certain things. Technology, for instance, millennials were some of the people that were championing, pushing for some of these things. Gen Z were pushing for some of these things. And there was some rigidity that used to exist before. And COVID kind of turned that thing upside down, and the rigidity had to be rethought and things had to be changed a little bit. And it's funny because I was kind of thinking along the same lines in the sense that our relationships are as strong as we are flexible. When you really think about in between the homeschooling, in between the hunt for tissue paper and learning how to have personal space while you were in the presence of other people, you had to be flexible. Living room had to be turned into office spaces. Kitchens had to be turned into office spaces. So while you were there and you love somebody to hang out together, I know of some couples that have a break room in the kitchen. The two offices are the bedrooms or the basement, and they met in the kitchen to have their coffee break. You had to be flexible. You know how sometimes we say, I like my personal space. You know, once in a while, I need to walk away and catch a breath and be alone. You couldn't necessarily have that because you were there with your partner all the time. You had to be flexible in order to make things work. If there wasn't any flexibility, your relationship would struggle a little, would struggle a little bit. And above all, I think we got to a place whereby we learned to be okay with the unknown.
One of the things you mentioned, relationships and personal space, right? Here's a funny thing. For anybody that knows me, they'll always know that my wife and I had always had this pact, this agreement that we would never work for the same company. We'd never work. You know, the main reason behind that was, you know, we wanted to give each other time apart. You know, you go to your job, I'll go to mine, and then we'll meet at the end of the day and, you know, share. How was your day? How was this? We kind of had this feeling that being in each other's space 24/7 was impossible. Well, guess what? COVID made us work.
You had no choice. So
we're working for different companies, but we're sharing the same work. So we were seeing each other 24/7, you know. It was a little difficult. We had to adjust. We had to adapt. But at the end of the day, what we learned was, you know what? It's not as bad as we thought it was. It's not as bad as we thought it was. But it was just interesting that one of our core rules was broken by this situation. You know, where we said we wouldn't spend 24 hours around each other. Well, we do now.
You know, and that's what we do sometimes. I find that too in my relationship. We limit our relationship. We already put a cap in saying, no, this wouldn't work for us. But really, when you really think about it, when we push the boundary, we would actually say, you know what, why weren't we not doing this before? Because this actually works better for us. So it's that flexibility to be able to see that, hey, we're stronger when we're flexible. We need to adapt. I don't know what's going to happen in the next 10 years, what we will need to deal with and how we will need to adjust. But hey, I think we need to take the perspective of saying, hey, you know what? It's necessary because every 10 years, there needs to be a shift in how we approach life, relationships, professional spaces, and everything else that we do. The other thing I was just thinking of, one of the things that kind of 2020 taught me about was the idea of self-love. More often when we talk about self-love or self-care, we usually talk about taking some time to go and eat that sugary donut or to go and indulge on that habit that actually doesn't help, that actually self-destructive. But 2020 kind of changed that because you're always indulging in those destructive self-habits. I mean, the cafeteria is a walk away. You can open it anytime and nobody charges you. All you got to do is just go and wait in the line and buy the stuff. And so you always had access to many of these things that were there. So self-love or self-care really took a center for me in the sense that when it's self-care or it's self-love, it has to have a productive, it has to have a healthy, it has to have some meaning that will build me up. Not necessarily, you know what, I had a stressful day. You know what, I'm just going to do whatever I want. I'm just going to binge watch for the next seven episodes. And by the way, you couldn't do that because you're on Zoom the whole day. So so you can't do that anymore. So that took on the self meaning. So for me, it taught me how to slow down, to think, to feel, and to rediscover things that are healthy for me. I mean, I never used to consider my guy as a guy who used to walk in the neighborhood. But the gym was closed. And there was no commuting back and forth to work. So I had to rediscover my neighborhood. I had to find some spots. And I discovered that when you walk a particular route, it's 1 kilometer. When you walk a particular route, it's 1.5 kilometers. So I had to rediscover all of these things. And for me, that was an eye opener on how we have thought of self-love and self-care in some destructive ways and ways that were not necessarily healthy and helpful in building our relationships. In fact, I had more walks with my wife in 2020 than I did in all the years we have probably been married. We took time to walk more. I mean, for some people, it's a no-brainer. You guys walk. I mean, you run together. You got those couple fitness goals. I mean, for us, we have those goals, but we do them separately here and there. But it was good to slow down. It was good to see many families walking. You used to bump into people in your neighborhood that you didn't think, houses that you didn't know. It's like, you know, those ghost houses. I wonder who stays in that house. But now you bump into them. Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing? Good to see you. The first time it's like, hi. And the next time it's like, hey. And then they're like, hey, how you doing? So you get to know your neighborhood, your friends, and you experience more. You had a chance to slow down, think, feel. That compassion fatigue that we normally have is what was dealt with because we had the chance to slow down, think, feel. Go back to the basics. Walk, sleep, drink water.
True. Now, speaking of self-care, speaking of slowing down, thinking, I found 2020 forced me to do that. Self-care. The first thing I had to address in self-care for me was self. I had to rediscover myself. This came about with the global push for Black Lives Matter. For a lot of people, but allow me to go there. All right.
Let's go there.
I found myself asking, how do I really feel about this issue? You know, we kind of looked at it from a headline perspective, you know. What is your feeling on Black? Oh, this is exactly how I feel about blackness. This is exactly how I feel about racism. This is exactly how I feel about injustice. But then having to have those awkward conversations with your fellow man, whether it's your coworkers, your family members, your neighbors, people of a different color, people of the same color. I rediscovered a lot of things about myself that perhaps I hadn't been pushed to go there. You know how sometimes you give an answer and, you know, usually the adults are happy with your answer and they walk away. But when they keep asking questions, you know, why is that thing there? Oh, because it's there, you know, and everybody walks away and they're fine with it. But when a kid asks you a question, you know, it's like, Daddy, why is this here? You know, you give your random canned answer and then they come back with, but why? Why? But why? And
it you forces, either have to think or be annoyed.
Yeah. I found 2020 forced me into that space. It was like 2020 to me was a young, curious mind that kept asking me why. You know, it made me look deeper into the why behind a lot of things I do, a lot of things I think. And that challenged me. That really, really challenged me to say, okay, how do I really feel about this issue? You know, let's go beyond the headlines. Of course, inequality is wrong. Of course, injustice is wrong. But we were forced as a nation, as, you know, a global village to even tackle the systemic, you know, foundations behind the act that we see as a result of that. And it made a lot of people uncomfortable, you know. And that was interesting for me. That was really, really interesting.
It goes for me as I'm thinking. I had a conversation with somebody. She's Black. She's in an interracial relationship. And she'd say to me that, you know what? Sometimes when I'm outside of my home, it's a strange feeling. It's weird. I don't know what to do with it. When we go back to our house, we can have this conversation with my spouse, and it feels like it's a safe space. Before, we were never forced to think about it. And she was saying that it took her back to the time where some of these interracial relationships were banned and shunned. And now we take for granted all these things.
Right.
Now, for the first time, we're thinking about these things. We're thinking about relationship dynamics in this way. And for some reason, we either had two plus, if you want to add another one, we had those who were too sensitive about the issue and failed and refused to confront it and talk about it. Right. And there were those who took 2020 to say, hey, you know what? These things are real. Let's talk about them. Pushing beyond the racial, interracial couples, pushing beyond the discrepancies in the male and female pay scales, pushing beyond the inequalities in our systems, pushing beyond. 2020 made us think, made us have the difficult conversation. I remember having a conversation with somebody who was saying that, you know what? When we have these conversations about race, I freeze. I don't know what to say because whatever I say may be taken negatively or I might be insensitive. I don't know what to do. And right. as I was reflecting about that, I had two options. I could say, well, you were wrong. Well, you need to support. You need to. But I had to pause and think and say, hey, you know what? Maybe we haven't had these conversations enough. We haven't talked about these things on a real sense. We haven't slowed down to think, to feel, to reflect, and rediscover what really makes us people and human beings. The self portion of it was taken for granted. It was the other that we perhaps were always looking at. Oh, look at that. Oh, look at that. Oh, look at that. And for a moment, all social media was focused on one thing. The cute selfies were no longer a hit anymore. The likes were on the social injustices. The likes were on the pandemic. The likes were all on the other issues that were happening around. So if you wanted some likes, you had to take a selfie wearing a t-shirt or standing someplace somewhere. So for a moment, we had to slow down. Think, feel, and experience the moment of what it looks like. 2020 was a boundary pusher.
It did. It forced a lot. As you said, I think sometimes our lives were just too busy. There were so many other things going on that we could afford the luxury of ignoring important issues. We could, you know, give ourselves an excuse for not knowing enough. But when everything else is closed, you know, and you don't have so many options, it forces you to confront certain issues. You know, you have that uncomfortable conversation where someone says to you, okay, educate me about your struggle.
Right.
And someone says to you, I am ignorant of your pain. You know, I don't know. And they mean that in the total honesty of saying, I grew up in a small town in Canada. The first time I met a Black person was in university when I moved into a big city. So I don't understand. You know, certain innuendos and little things that come into a sentence that we've never noticed how detrimental they are. Suddenly, when you look at, you know, cultural appropriation and being sensitive or insensitive to certain things, that came up, you know, and it made it, you know, something for us to confront. It made it something for us to step out of our zone. One guy says to me, you can't harvest where you haven't sown. You know, what you were saying to me at this point is because you've never educated me on you and, you know, what goes on in your world, don't expect me to act a certain way based on knowledge you haven't provided, you know. And he was frank enough to admit that society and colonialism has it in such a way that I have had to learn about his way, but he has never had to learn mine. You know, think about it. I'm a young African guy.
That's an interesting thought, because from our school system and how everything is structured, colonialism came in and educated us on a particular way of doing life, but it wasn't necessarily done so in other parts of the world. So some education needed to be done.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, when you look at the Western culture, or Western civilization is something that would have been taught everywhere to all the colonies. But yet the flip didn't happen. So nobody had to learn about my place. Nobody had to learn about my background. Nobody had to learn about my history, but I had to learn about theirs, you know?
Right.
And that's normal for centuries. That's been considered
right.
normal. So suddenly when, you know, the pressure hits max and everything blows up, we've had to look at it and say, why is there this inequality? You know, why is it that I know about you and I can navigate your world, but you've never had to learn mine and never had to, you know, sidestep my sensitive issues, you know? And it goes back to that there are some people in society that have never had to.
Right.
And that's the standard.
And that's 2020. 2020 brought us back to say, hey, maybe we need to think about that. Maybe we need to pause and reflect on that. I mean, 2020, what else, man, did you learn from 2020? What else did you learn from 2020?
Oh, man, this was my biggest lesson. The greatest tragedy for me so far in my life happened in 2020. I lost my dad in April. Mm. And it was a time of travel restrictions, so I couldn't go home to be with family. Traditionally, in my culture, at least, you're surrounded by family. You know, whether I were to travel home to be with my immediate siblings, or even being here, if I couldn't travel, my family here, my community here would come in and sit down with me and support me, you know, and we couldn't have that because of distancing. What I was amazed and humbled by was just the show of support, even with the limits that we had. Man, I can say I literally had calls from across the world. You know, this is not a federation of a state where people say, you know, everyone hates me. No, not everyone hates me. No, I'm starving. No, you're not. You don't know what starvation is.
You had breakfast.
But I literally had calls from literally across the globe. You know, people from all walks of life showing support in different ways, whether it's a phone call, a text. You know, people were given financial support, spiritual support. The highlight of it all was a time when two friends of mine, they live in Edmonton, Joe and Fortune. Those guys called me up one afternoon and sang me Michael Jackson's "You Are Not Alone." You know, for anyone that knows those dudes, that was, you know, that was it for me. You know, that was it. Just to hear my voice checking in on me. Hey, how you doing? Is everything okay? Yeah. So how are the plans going at home? What do you need? No, they were willing to drive all the way here just to come be with me. And they would call every now and again. They would text every now and again. But the highlight was they just called and sang "You Are Not Alone." That was, oh, man. That was it. That was it.
We take for granted the concept of a global village.
Yeah.
And I think 2020 really showed us that, because speaking from an immigrant perspective, there are times where you have to bury your family via text messages, via phone calls.
Right.
And it just so happens that the funerals happened so fast and maybe you couldn't go for whatever reason. But now with the pandemic, and you could and you would have been able to go, but because of the circumstances that were present, you couldn't go. And we had to relearn on how to mourn. We
right.
had to relearn and how to support each other. Yeah, that word, relearn. Some of the things that you think that, how do I relearn something? It's, and most of us, we're already in our 60s, 50s, 70s. We had to relearn a whole lot of things. And technology, man, made some of these things possible.
Right. And that was the thing for me, to see how technology was able to bridge that gap for me, you know, where traditionally somebody would come and sit down next to you, hold your hand and say, man, I'm sorry, you know, my condolences. and they'd say a few words or two, they'd leave, the next person would come and sit next to you. So going into it, my thought was nobody's going to come and sit next to me. So right away I'm feeling like, oh man, there's this huge gap. But
I'm gonna be alone.
technology filled that up so quick, man. Video calls, phone calls, text messages, emails, all of that, man, was people coming to sit next to me and tell me, we got you. It's gonna be
Right,
okay.
right, right.
What can I do? Oh, that was a lot. That was a lot for me. It made me realize that sometimes we crave closeness. Sometimes we crave support. We may have interpreted it in our mind to be done a certain way. You know, now we have to learn to accept it, even when it's been done differently. We have to learn to appreciate it, even when it's expressed differently. And that was the thing that was the biggest for me, is learning to acknowledge things, the same principle, but being expressed differently. You know, so that was cool.
It's always an eye opener. I think human beings are capable of so many things. And it's true when people say that, when you say I can't, you can't. If you say you can, who's that guy? Is it Ford? Who say that? If you say you can, you can. If you say you can't, you can't. And I think sometimes as human, we underestimate our capability and the possibilities that we have. 2020 made us slow down and think like children. If I can't cut through here, I'm gonna push around. I'm gonna go around. Eventually, I'm gonna cry. I'm gonna try and jump over, but I'm gonna get there. And for a moment, 2020 made us think like children, where you know what? I want that thing over there. There's these things that are blocking me. I will do everything. If I need to go behind the couch and get stuck there and come back and do that, or ask mommy to carry me, pick me up and put me on the other side, I will do it to be able to get there. And I think that's what really happened with 2020. We became that global community where we began to support each other in different ways, in meaningful ways. I mean, we can't replace human contact, but one thing that stands out for me is that despite of the fact that we can't replace human contact, we are able to engineer, manufacture, come up with ways where we can still stay connected.
No doubt. No.
That's being human. That's being human. And relationships saw that too. Some relationships had to change their routine altogether, changing everything. Dates, like you were saying, we were all equal. A date is at home. Nobody's going to that expensive restaurant. Nobody's going to go and shop and buy that expensive Armani or Gucci or whatever. I mean, some people could shop online, but still, it leveled things. It made us think outside the box. And some people that have the flowers on automatic billing to be mailed in by the florist, they couldn't do that anymore. So they had to be creative in order to be able to attend to their spouses, in order to attend to their girlfriends, in order to attend to their significant people. We had to think outside the box in order to be able to stay connected, to be there for each other in meaningful and supportive ways. I know some of these things we can go on. There's one thing that I learned, and part of being what I do. In relationship coaching, counseling, and being a pastor, there's one thing that I observed a lot in 2020. And I've always looked at the term and thought, you know, that's the extreme. You know, it's this category. It's the idea of trauma bonding. And when we got to 2020, I began to see trauma bonding from a different perspective. It wasn't either you are bonded in a traumatic way or you are not bonded in a traumatic way. And when I think of trauma, I've always thought of the one who yells, the one who is abusive, the one who punches, the one who was really says derogatory terms or calls the other person names. but it took on a different meaning as I was looking at relationships around and talking to different people. By simplest definition, trauma bonding is a negative form of bonding that keeps you loyal to a situation that is unhealthy. This is the distilled version of me. Of course, there's the sophisticated version of it. For me, it's the loyalty to a situation that is unhealthy. Right. And when I put it that way, it began to apply to every relationship. Think about it. In 2020, there are some individuals who lost jobs and some people who were dating who were forced to move in together because they had to make it. So they needed somebody who could make money. Some people couldn't make sense of the world outside because it was painful. It was difficult. And the only person who understood them was the person who was in a relationship with them. They may have not loved them in the way that they wanted to be loved. Speaking of love languages, it was just mediocre relationship. In fact, they were thinking of breaking up with the guy or the girl. But because the world was difficult out there, the only thing that made sense was to, you know what, I'm just going to stay here because it's all I had. Right. 2020 taught me that there was a lot of relationships that are in trauma bonding. Even sometimes some marriages, we are bonding in areas of trauma. We're sticking through in areas that are unhealthy. And sometimes it's not even the extreme things whereby somebody's punching somebody's face or somebody's yelling at somebody. It's the unhealthy things that we like to do. And we bond around those unhealthy things. And we say, hey, baby, this is our thing. I don't know if this should be your thing. It's one of those things I figured, you know what, it's a spectrum. It's not either you are in a trauma bond or you're not in a trauma bond. I came to the conclusion that many, if not all, relationships have some form of trauma bonding. And if that thing is not addressed, it'll become a normal part of the relationship. In fact, it might even get worse. When there's conflict in the relationship, that thing becomes magnified. As opposed to being that cute thing that you guys bond around, it becomes that thing that becomes destructive. People stuck around because it was better to be in there than what was happening around the world. That thing hit me.
So in your opinion, though, as somebody who has seen that, professionally, these are some of the things you deal with. What would you, you know, how would you counter that? I mean, without obviously, you know, endorsing a professional opinion or anything of that nature. But as you speak about it, I realize it's true that there was a lot of trauma bonding that was magnified by the circumstances we've had in 2020. But even if I were to downsize it and take it a step back a little, it's something that we've always done. You know, we have those friends that we're close to because they provide the hardest gossip. You know what I mean?
Toxic friendships.
we're friends with them based on this negative thing, right? Or, you know, we have a common hate for somebody, so we drink from the same haterade. How do we break out of that cycle? Because you're right. When that becomes the norm in our relationship, whether it's relationship with friends, family, or significant other, it becomes unhealthy and it will obviously have detrimental effects. So how would one step back from that at an early stage?
As you mentioned it, no one size fits everything. One thing that was evident as I was seeing it all over in my personal life, in other people's lives, professionally, non-professionally, was that one of the reasons why we settle for certain things is because we've stopped growing. We've become comfortable in a way of doing things. It becomes difficult to grow because it takes energy. It takes time. It takes you changing certain behaviors and habits. The motivation that you have, you know, every morning we want to wake up. I don't know why somebody would put a snooze button on an alarm system that's supposed to wake us up. It's like we have the motivation, but we keep on hitting the snooze. It's like the alarm was designed to trap us into procrastinating. And so for me, I discovered that the antidote, one thing that could be an antidote, was to seek growth. Because more often when people bond in a particular area, and as I mentioned earlier on, this is not the bonds where I'm talking about, where the extreme one where it's abusive relationships, where there's fighting. You know how there's love that in between, there is abuse that's disguised in there. I'm talking about the healthy, quote-unquote, relationships. I think growth was one thing that I saw that, you know what, maybe a relationship needs to grow. The reason why many of the relationships that were locked in a household with somebody whom you thought you love, but you were always bickering over the same things, it's because you've stopped growing. Think about how your situation early on, you mentioned that, you know what, you had told yourself with your wife that we cannot work for the same company. Right. But look at it. You were sharing the same Wi-Fi, the same company's Wi-Fi, and you made it work.
Right.
But you told yourself that, you know what, no, it wouldn't work. And you kissed and you hugged, you know, yeah, baby, we can do this. And it was a mutual agreement. Like, right. You were cool with it. You were fine with it. And in that sense, we limit ourselves. But when 2020 came through, 2020 says, like, no, I'm not going to settle for that. We got to push the boundaries. And look at that. You were able to do that. And who knows? You guys are going to be running your company. Not working for a company, you're going to be running your company and working better, because now the possibilities have become evident. So for me, it was pursuing growth. For some, growth looks differently. For some, growth looks like going on walks. I never used to go on walks with my wife. We would do the occasion here and there. She walks more than I do. I mean, even if the grocery store was closer walking distance, I would go into the car, start the car, and drive to the grocery store and look for the closest spot to the door. And still say, you know what, I'm trying to work on my health, but I'll still be frustrated. How could a person park like this? I mean, leave some space, because we want to park close and complain about that. She walks more than I do. So we were put in a position where we needed to grow. So I took some time to walk with her. Our kids enjoyed the walks. They rode our bicycles more often with us as we're together. So for me, the growth was what was significant in that. I don't know, but what do you think, man? What are some of the things that we can, because it's real, trauma bonding exists. These ideas of self-love that are dysfunctional exist. Being able to adapt, we talk about it, but how do we actually get to do some of this stuff?
In answering this, I think for me, at least, what I learned during the pandemic was to be considerate, you know, being considerate of the next person, you know, because in my mind, I'm saying, why would anyone do this? Why would people do that? And I, you know, then I turn the tables and say, why would I do that? Or would I do that if I was in the same situation? You know, whether it's, you know, panic buying, when I go to the store and I find toilet paper, you know, or do I take 1,000 just in case? But if I buy all, you know, the whole shelf, how about the next person? I had to think in that way. I had to be considerate. You know, they say, be the change you want to see. I had to think that way. It was uncomfortable for a while, but I had to do it. You know, the wearing of a mask. I'm neither for nor against it. You know, you show me the reason behind it, I'll do it. You tell me the rule to get into my store, I'll do it. I mean, I was fascinated to see people complaining about how if you don't have a mask, you can't get into a store. Well, that's insane. But these are the same people who obey the same rules that are not. So no jeans, no entrance. Fine, they'll put on proper pants, you know. No problem with rules about entering an establishment until it's a mask, you know. And it was crazy. You know, I was even talking to a guy who says, well, I don't believe in math. I'm like, yeah, but there are people who do. How about doing it for the sake of those that do? Says, oh, that's insane. Who does that? I'm like, parents do that. You know, you don't believe in that. But if you know, or you don't believe in the tooth fairy, but if the kids do, you go out of your way to do it for them, not for yourself, but for them. You know, you'll sneak a dollar under their pillow just to say, oh, the tooth fairy came and gave that to you. No, it wasn't. That was you, you know. But you do crazy things, quote unquote. You do stupid things for the sake of those that it would benefit. You know, if it benefits your kids to sleep at night by you saying, I took the monster out. Look, I'm taking the monster. I'm putting it in my pocket. We do weird stuff like that all the time, you know.
That's been considerate. You know, it's interesting, too, to think of consideration. Yeah.
You know, and I said to myself, if we would go that far, why can't you put on a mask for 20 minutes that you're in a store? Like, come on, you know. And that was my thing is, I guess we have to start being considerate. We have to start thinking of the other person and saying, you know, what would make you do that? Would I do that if I was in your shoes? You know, if the roles were reversed, what would I expect you to do for me? That was a starting point for me in a lot of things. That could possibly be a starting point for a lot of people, as you're saying. How do we navigate this going forward? You know, I would start by saying, be considerate. You know, if you don't know what it's like to be in the other person's shoes, perfect. Start the conversation. You know,
right.
What are your thoughts on this? Why? You know, what shapes them? Is it something that, you know, your personal experience from childhood? Is it, you know, it must be true because I read it on the internet? Is it, I don't know, I've always heard this. But getting to that understanding of knowing or trying to know why people do things a certain way. And then in the same instance, taking time to explain yours as well. You know, part of the problem is we've always assumed that people know our side of the story, you know. And that's what causes that frustration when they're not acting the way we expect them to, is because we think they already know, and they might not, you know. So those are my two biggest takeaways. If I could prescribe anything for anybody, is A, be considerate, try to understand, and B, communicate, you know. Say what's on your mind. Say what...
I think a tagline for 2020 would have been, 2020 taught us to start the conversation.
Yep, absolutely.
And I think about health, about relationships, about family, about fitness. Start the conversation, because you don't know everything.
That was the biggest one for me. Social injustice. I found 2020 forced us to start the conversation. You know, and that was a great starting point. That's what made the changes that we're slowly beginning to see. I mean, we're not where we want to be, but we're definitely not where we used to be. You know,
that's right. Globally.
Globally. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Globally. Hey, Arnold, man, I know we can go on and have this conversation about the things we learned in 2020. And I mean, this cannot be fully exhausted. Everybody learned different things in 2020. But one thing for sure stuck out. We began to see the value of people. And that's what we've been talking about all along in our conversation here, learning to adapt and be flexible. Self-love, because you can't pour from an empty cup. And trauma bonding, you thought your relationship was made, but it still needs to be baked and recooked or reheated, because there's some certain things that need to be worked on. Hey, Arnold, thank you so much for joining Relationship Factor. It was a blast having you over, man. As always, if you want to get more information and resources on Relationship Factor, go ahead and check out relationshipfactor.org. Hey, if you like the podcast, why don't you go ahead and share it, follow, tell everybody, tell your neighbor, tell your friend, tell them Relationship Factor is happening. And while you're at it, give us a 5-star rating. We appreciate you. Thank you, Arnold.
Thanks for having me, bro.
Relationship Factor, we out.